Welcome to In Season, exploring farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. There are a lot of wonderful things about living near the beach. The sound of the waves, the smell of the ocean, walking on the beach, call of seabirds, beautiful sunsets. But gardening right next to the ocean can be tricky. Sandy soil, salt breezes, strong winds. Our guest this week, landscape contractor Pam Fleming, has seen it all in her years of gardening in the seaside area. I had a great time sitting down with her in her lovely home office and having a good chat about the challenges and rewards of gardening near the beach. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Today on In Season, we are talking to Pam Fleming. She is a landscape contractor based in Seaside, and she has a company called Nature's Helper Landscaping. Nature's Helper, she's nodding at me, so this is good. I've gotten it right. So welcome, Pam.
Thank you.
So one of the things I really wanted to talk to Pam about is we hear a lot when you talk about gardening in this area, a lot of people end up talking about, you know, their heavy clay soil and how terrible that is and so hard to work with. And Pam works in an area where people pretty much have the opposite problem. They have very sandy soil and they are gardening very near the ocean. And if you haven't driven through Seaside, or if you have driven through Seaside, you have definitely seen Pam's handiwork. She does all the landscaping for the city of Seaside, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's worth a drive just to go and look at it. But she is constantly dealing with sandy, rocky soil. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about how do you deal with that as a challenge? Because it is challenging, isn't it?
It is. It's either you have, in the old days in this area, they used to put into the ground what they called clay gumbo, which when you mix clay with sand, you end up with concrete. And so lots of the areas that I've worked in, I've had to go down and dig that out and replace it with mixes that you can buy at local mix, you know, soil places. And other than that, as I work into the gardens, I have to add compost. I constantly add compost to the gardens. And you just have to remove and replace pretty much with me and make sure you get good drainage. That's all I've tried to achieve.
Is drainage, I mean, I wouldn't think of drainage as being an issue with sandy soil, but it is in certain places.
It's an issue because the water table comes up. You know, when the tide's up, there's no place for water to go. So water just sits in the ground. And if you have no place for it to spread out into, if you have all kinds of different blockages, then everything just sits in water all winter long. And in the summertime, if you had clay mixed into that mix, then mm-hmm. you would have layering and the water would have no way to filter out of anywhere. And it just turns into layers of, the stratification just becomes impossible for the water to get through. So
yes, I'm starting to get really excited that I don't have sandy soil. but let's talk a little bit about, so, I mean, there's a concept of microclimates. And so you're really working in a microclimate that's, I mean, how would you describe this?
I have every kind of microclimate. I have full sun microclimates. I have shade with no drainage and full force wind from the ocean. I have full sun with full force wind from the ocean. I mean, it's every kind of microclimate here. So.
And how much does being close to the ocean, how does that affect? I mean, is there actually salt issues that people get when they are living near the ocean?
The closest you get to the ocean, when you talk about dunes, you talk about the dune 1, dune 2. In Seaside, as you get closer to the ocean, the dune 1, you have to be very careful what you plant up in that direction because it'll burn. It'll just burn up. I've tried lots of things.
What's causing it to burn?
The salt.
Okay.
In the wind, in the winter. Most of the time you try to, like most of the conifers that you try up closer to the ocean, they burn. You try to use more things that are deciduous because it doesn't matter in the winter because winter's when it's damaged.
Okay.
So that when you see a lot of burn on conifers or on, you see trees, look, when you're driving along, just look at trees and see how they lean one direction. You can see that you're getting closer to the ocean. It's, you know, so those things affect. That's how you can kind of decide where your wind and the salt stops. You can just kind of tell. And then as soon as you get past that, you can start planting things that most people can plant anywhere as long as it's within your zone.
And would you find, are there things that grow in Seaside that don't grow well other places? I mean, we used to farm in Seaside when we first moved here, and there's definitely things that I think grew better for us here than do, we're now out in Olney, so it's about maybe 9 miles in from Astoria, so it's much sunnier and warmer mm-hmm. there. We have more of the clay soil problem. It's a lot hotter in the summer, colder in the winter.
But we can push zones here. I mean, it's a little bit warmer here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just more moderate. So you can push the zone a bit here and go into more of the zone 8 things. But you just have to be careful where you put them, because if they're up high, then that's where the cold kind of, where you can see where the cold damage hits too. You can see your highs and lows and where the cold is going to hit something. So you don't want to plant something that isn't pushing a zone in an area where you know it's going to get colder. So you can push things here a little bit more. It's funny that you say that, because I get people in from the valley all the time, and they'll come in and they'll go, everything is so much prettier here. It's just, you have so many more things here that grow here. And I'm thinking, I've seen all of these things in the valley. And to me, when I go to the valley, they're like giants in the valley. The plants are twice as big. Here they're when I'm designing something and it says a maximum, this is what it's going to be mature, I always bring it back down, because it's never going to get that big here. Everything here is shrunk.
And why?
I don't know, but I remember one time I brought in a 7-foot evergreen. Someone had an arborvitae hedge, right?
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to add one more, and it was a 7-foot tall hedge. And we brought in a 7-foot tall arborvitae, and we all looked at that arborvitae and we went, that's not the right plant. It's too green. It's lush. It's like the inner nodes were long. And they were like, I don't think you got the right plant. I'm, yes, it's the right one. Just trust me. And so within 2 years, I think, I went back over and looked at it, and it looked just like the rest of them. It had kind of pulled itself in, shriveled up. I mean, it's kind of a scary thing to think about, but the way everything is here, the way the weather is here, everything's, I think it just,
the plants are shivering yourself.
Like, I don't know, I guess, you know, New England has nothing on us. I don't know what it does. I don't know if it doesn't allow it to push or what, mm-hmm. but yeah.
It also stays cooler here too, which I think is something that I know people in the valley talk about, the things that we can grow through the summer here, that for them it shrivels up and dies midsummer because it's hot. It'd be like nasturtiums or sweet peas or things like that, that just here they'll just stay lush and wonderful all summer.
It seems like we have a longer growing season, but we don't, because it's later.
Yeah.
So when they come from the valley down here, it's still lush and beautiful at the end of the season, and it's all burned up there. So that's one of the reasons why it's a great place to come, you know?
Yeah.
Extend your summer. So
did you grow up in this area? Did you grow up gardening in this climate?
Kansas.
So very different.
Oh, yeah. Night and day.
How long did it take you to learn to the Northwest, especially the Northwest coast?
Well, the first thing I did was go to Clatsop Community College and take the Master Gardener class.
That's what I did, that too.
Yes.
Isn't that great?
Because it was so obviously different.
Yes.
You know, alkaline, Kansas is alkaline. This is acidic.
Yeah.
It's 20 below in the winter and 105 in the summer. It's like there's nothing the same here.
Uh-huh.
And I picked up a few clients and just started gardening and just started figuring it out. And I worked with a wonderful woman when I first came. She was a landscape contractor, and she helped me through a lot of things and taught me a lot. And then from then it was just learning, you know, once you have the, you just keep learning all the time, mm-hmm. constantly researching and learning. So
are there plants that you really regret that you can't grow, they just won't grow here? Is there anything that's a heartbreaker for you?
I missed lilacs. I feel like I know you can grow them here, but they're mm-hmm. not like the ones from that of my memory.
Yeah.
They don't have as much fragrance, and they're not giant. Mm-hmm. There were whole hedges of lilacs. I do remember that is one particular. And then the deciduous trees.
Yeah.
You know, we have lots of, Portland, you go into Portland and I can feel that again. I love uh-huh. that. But there's just a couple of things like that. Zinnias, can't grow those.
Oh,
I mean, flowers like
terrible.
That.
I
simple
know.
Little flowers
oh,
like
zinnias,
that.
Zinnias, yeah.
Yeah, but no, not.
So what works
There's so many
here?
More
well, I know. And it's so it's so easy to focus on the things that are heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I also really
tomatoes.
Like to focus on. What? Oh, yeah, I know. Oh, tomatoes. But it's possible. It's just
they're not
challenging.
They're tiny.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You get the flavor, but they're like little mini bites. And,
yeah.
I mean,
well,
for us,
yeah,
that's
cherry tomatoes. Yeah, you need to focus
right.
on cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, but you don't get the great big round,
no.
yummy
no.
bite into, and
no.
they run down your no.
No.
Peaches, things like that.
Yeah.
Big. Yeah. Ooh. Anyway, but yeah.
Okay.
So many good things, though.
But so what works here? You know, and especially, I'm thinking, especially here in a community like Seaside, when you're close to the ocean, you got this sandy soil, high water table. What do you do? What works?
A lot of things. I mean, mm-hmm. there's nothing. I'm constantly trying. I mean, of course, all the gardens downtown are ornamental. There's a few edibles in them, but for the most part, it's all ornamental. And what I have done over the past 20 years is gone from, I have very few annuals. I'll have a few spots down there where I call them color spots, where I need constant color. Like at the turnaround, I need constant color. But for the most part, I do a lot of perennials and a lot of small shrubs, flowering shrubs, things that don't take as much care. I'm constantly trying things like that, and it's a great way to go. Especially when you get older, you just really need to cut back on how much labor there is and expense. I mean, there's a lot going on down there. So there's a lot of things you can try here, but I can't, I have lists and lists and lists, but to just
Yeah, no, I know. Well, and I would really suggest if people are looking for plants that do well in this region to like take a walking tour through Seaside and look at the different shrubs and plants that are growing in all of the
I
areas.
give it to her once a year
And when do you do that?
at the end of July.
Oh, nice. Okay, so look out for that.
Yes.
And because that's a great way to see what does well in this
It's really
area.
the, it's very easy. I always give out a handout that gives all the names of all the plants downtown. So, and a lot of the plants that I use downtown, I also integrate into designs that I do for other people. And I'm also learning more about designing things for deer. So that's been a real fun thing.
Do you have deer in town or just deer in
No,
people's
but
gardens?
I do design work for people, and a lot of them, that's one of the big concerns is deer. And so I've been pooling out and researching with other people and finding out what they've had good luck with and what it's so interesting though, because one landscape they don't eat it, the next one they do. And there are some tried and trues though, so you can, that's been a challenge for me
I
too.
feel like the deer are regional here as well because we had deer in Seaside that did not eat certain plants. I think about the sedum, that sedum autumn joy that's so beautiful.
Really?
They didn't eat that,
That's
and they wouldn't
funny.
eat Microcosmia. And I brought those plants with me to Olney, and they are just mowed down. I've had to move them inside of our elk fence because they will not live outside because the deer will
Yeah.
just voraciously eat them. But the Seaside deer were not interested in them at all.
That's
But
funny.
you have them eaten here.
Yeah, sedums, those are definitely candy. I don't do Crocosmia. I'm kind of a
Well, yeah, I know. It can be a horrible plant, but this is that beautiful red one, Lucifer,
Yes,
that I like, and the hummingbirds love it.
yeah, they
So,
do.
I know. So, what are some other plants that you would recommend for people? I mean,
Well, coming, I know this is going to sound awful, but coming from Kansas, I'm constantly experimenting with the different rhododendrons that are around because I
I
couldn't
don't
grow
think that's
them in
awful at
Kansas. I couldn't grow them.
all.
I think they're beautiful. There are so many to choose from that you can find that have great foliage all year long. They have a beautiful bloom. I have a tendency to go for the more simple blooms and the colors that aren't, I don't like the mixed color, flowers, but you can do a lot with rhododendrons, and so there's one thing that I have been trying a lot in my landscapes.
Do you use azaleas?
I don't use them as much as I do rhododendrons. I do the deciduous azaleas, but
What about fuchsias?
I love fuchsias.
And
Lots of
they do
fuchsias.
really
They
well
do great
here.
here and they bloom forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're so fun.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
funny, I think a lot of those shrubs, hydrangeas were another one that I always thought of them, this is a terrible thing to say, but when I was a child, I always thought of them as old lady plants because they always seemed to be the kind of plants that were growing in gardens like the old ladies had. And I was very snobby about them when I first started gardening. I was like, oh, I'm not going to grow those shrubs. And now I love them because they're so beautiful.
Right.
And there's so many different ones out there.
Yeah.
And hydrangeas are another one that do pretty well here, don't
And
they?
they've come up with some new varieties that bloom on the new wood that are more familiar to people, more of the mop head rather than paniculatas always bloom on new wood, but the macrophylla used to always bloom just once, and now they've got them to where they've bred them so where you can cut them and they'll bloom on this year's growth,
Okay,
which is kind of cool.
so you're using some really exciting plant Latin.
Oh.
And that's so cool, and
Well,
I'm
new
always so impressed.
hydrangeas.
But so just to explain what you mean with paniculata
A
and
paniculata is the cone-shaped flower, and the macrophylla is the mop head or the lace caps. They are different kinds, but those typically used to, you'd cut them down in the at the end of season, and then they would bloom. You wouldn't be able to cut them very hard,
yeah,
because if you cut them too hard, you lose the bloom for the next year.
Yeah.
Well, now they've bred different kinds of hydrangeas so that it doesn't matter when you cut them. There's trees they're doing that with, too. Smoke tree. There's a new smoke tree out that
really?
You can bloom. You can cut it, and it blooms, and cut it, and it blooms. It's amazing at what they're doing. I mean, I think it's amazing. Some people might go, oh, that's not good. That's... Something's wrong with that, but I think it's cool.
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM Astoria and KTCB Tillamook at 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at coastradio.org. If you are just joining us for this week's In Season, we're talking with Seaside-based landscape contractor Pam Fleming about the challenges and rewards of gardening near the ocean.
Because, well, I know a lot of people fail in those with hydrangea. And another thing that's cool about the double blooming hydrangea, you have to be careful. Some of them aren't very good, but the ones that I've been using at the ocean front, because that's another plant that's a hard plant to figure out what to grow on the ocean. Hydrangeas do really well, but they burn up over the winter and they look awful. So you have to cut them hard. And then if you cut them too hard, you don't get the bloom.
Mm-hmm.
So now with these new hydrangeas, you have more of an opportunity to actually get a bloom and have them look decent through the whole year. So,
do you find that they get affected by sun, too much sun?
It depends.
Because I always think of them as being
burn.
Sort of a shade.
We do get burn on hydrangeas about once every other year, or you know, you'll
that
be
day
doing
when it hits
great,
90 degrees,
it's really hot, and they fry, and
yeah,
they're worthless after that.
Yeah.
So I try to place them so they don't get they'll never get late summer, late afternoon sun, because that's the sun that's going to get them. Anything mm-hmm. after like 3 o'clock, so a little bit of partial. But in the ocean front, you know, I haven't had any trouble with that on the ocean front, so I don't know why, but yeah, they do burn.
Yeah. What are some of, so you don't do many annuals?
No. I would say out of 100, I probably do 15% downtown is all there is. That's mm-hmm. annuals, almost all perennials down there, perennials and blooming shrubs.
And when you say that things are low maintenance, what does that mean? Is like a couple of times a year there's a lot of work, and then the rest of it is just mulching and deadheading? Or?
Exactly. That's part of the reason. Annuals they're not really high maintenance as much as, they just aren't, to me, they're not as interesting. They just, all they do is get bigger. They don't change. They're just a plant. They bloom, and that's all they do. But a perennial, especially if you mix perennials together with shrubs that are flowering, you have like a show. You have constant action in the garden. It's always interesting. It's not a mass of something. It's something all the time happening. Low maintenance to me means I don't have to deadhead it all the time to make it look nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to, I can fertilize in the spring. I don't have to fertilize again. Annuals have a tendency to need more fertilizer. I don't have to dig them out and replace them all the time, which is what an annual, you have to do with an annual.
Mm-hmm.
The highest maintenance part to me of a perennial is you have to divide it every 3 years. So that's not much to have to do and cut it down, you know. I've been experimenting a little bit with cutting back perennials. I've been reading about the reason why we lose a lot of our perennials at the coast. I particularly have lost. I can't grow echinacea. I have a hard time with agastache. Those are a couple that I really, really like. And I've been experimenting with not cutting the stem all the way to the ground, because I don't know if it's true. I'm experimenting. I can't give you any information yet. But supposedly, if you cut it, they have a hollow stem.
Mm-hmm.
And in the winter, part of the reason I think why they die is because they get so wet. Because echinacea is a cone flower. It's, you know, it's a
prairie. Yeah,
yeah, it's a prairie flower. And agastache is also uh-huh. something that likes a lot of heat.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that they don't want to sit there in the cold, wet ground and they're going to shrivel up like everything
yeah.
else does. So supposedly, if you don't cut the stem all the way to the ground, it's like providing it with some air. It's providing it with something to help it through the winter.
So if you leave the plant structure there, so you
yeah,
just don't cut
just
it back.
Don't cut the stem all the way to,
all
the,
way
crown.
To the ground.
Yeah.
Huh.
So we'll see. I did that this year, and I haven't gone back through to cut it all to the ground yet. We'll see how well they do.
So would you wait until you see new growth coming out?
Right.
And then you would cut the old
right.
growth out?
It would be kind of fun to try and see.
Yeah, because that would be so nice if you could start growing things like that. That is fascinating to me. I think that's one thing that people find intimidating about perennials, you know, and shrubs sometimes is when do you cut them back? How do I know? Am I killing it? What's the right time? Well, are there rules of thumb? Or?
Oh, yeah. And it's now that we all have cell phones and we can look things up on the internet, it's like amazing for me because I used to keep a notebook because I can't remember every single thing. When do I prune this? I'm going to cut off the flower if I cut it off now because everything looks bad in the spring.
Yeah.
And you want to just cut it all and start over. And lots of times that's obviously the wrong thing to do. And you just have to know what your plants are. Look them up and it'll, you know, it's easy to figure it out. When do you cut this? When do I prune this? It'll just, boom, it's there. It's uh-huh. The information is right there. And it makes all the difference for me. It's a big time saver.
So just doing a lot of research on the timing of things.
Even things I should know in my head, you know, there's so many. Everything's different, so.
Yeah. Well, when you're holding that many plants in your head, that's got to be a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when I think about growing in this region, like in the close to the ocean, sandy soil region, I think challenges that people are faced with, I mean, you talked earlier about compost and needing to amend the soil. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that people find really frustrating and hard because it's like, well, I put out all this compost. What do you mean I have to put it all out again? You know, what are those kind of ongoing maintenance things that you think of are as important here? And do you have to fertilize differently, do you think, here? Or is it just...
I don't know if we have to fertilize differently. I just have it on my schedule. I mean, in the spring now, let's see, we're in March, towards the end of March, and we have been cleaning up gardens as they deteriorate. Basically, mm-hmm. that's my motto, because I like leaving the seed heads on. I'm not a perfectly clean gardener. But as I go through the gardens, I put down compost as I go, because mm-hmm. once you've gone through them and you've groomed them and you've weeded them, then you put down a layer of compost and you're helping yourself out, helping the garden, and you're helping yourself because the weeds aren't going to germinate as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going to stay clean. And it also adds organic material to the ground. So mm-hmm. That's the way I clean up. And then in the spring, well, we're not quite there in my book. In my book, it's not spring until almost May. And that's when I start putting down fertilizer for the flowering beds, for the mm-hmm. landscapes that I work in. I start fertilizing them in February.
What do you think are the most... Do you use an all-purpose? Do you add lime? What are some of the key things that you do?
I only add lime to the lawns. I don't add it to the gardens.
Why is that? Because I've always heard that lime is one of those things that everyone needs to add out here because... You know, it sweetens the soil, and we have such acidic soil. And
I just
so
haven't needed to.
I don't.
Everything grows just fine. I haven't had to. I mean, lawns are just a little bit more high maintenance, and you end up with the acidic soil ends up creating moss. And I mean, I do have moss in the gardens, and I know that's probably partly why. But it just they're fine. So I just haven't. I'm kind of a lazy gardener. I don't do soil testing or anything like that. Compost is probably a neutralizer too. Mm-hmm. I don't know though. Most of it is made from wood products, which would contribute to it.
When it's composted well, it ends up being at a pretty neutral pH. So if you're adding compost, you're essentially adding material that's at a neutral pH. And
yeah.
So you're probably
and
helping
the,
right there.
The fertilizers I use are, you know, they're all an organic type fertilizer mm-hmm. with mycorrhizae, and I don't know how much of that is really important either, but, you know, you learn that over the years that it is. But I'm not a scientist about that, but mm-hmm. I don't use all-purpose. I use fertilizers that have lots of manures and not a lot of manures, but chicken manure and worm castings and bat guano and all of those good things that, to me, makes me feel good about adding it to the soil. It comes from a natural source, although the plants don't know the difference. But I feel like I'm constantly creating more of an organic material into the soil. So that all helps create good growing environments and you know, structures for life. So I don't know. It seems to be working.
So if people want to take a tour of downtown Seaside with you. You say you do that in July.
Mm-hmm.
How do they find out about that? Do you put it in the newspaper?
Advertised. The downtown merchants advertise it once a year. The SDDA, Seaside Downtown Development Association, they sponsor it. We have a little breakfast, and then I do a little slideshow, and then we walk all around town, and I just talk about everything down there.
So I would highly recommend that for anybody who's looking for recommendations for plants that grow well in our region. And I would imagine even though those are things that thrive in Seaside, they're probably pretty representative of plants that will do well in this area.
Right.
You may have some things that don't do as well if you live, like, you know, further out in Astoria or in Jewell or someplace, you know, up the Columbia River.
Right.
That might be a bit different.
As long as it's close to the zone, I would think so.
Yeah.
Not too far to the 8 number.
So, and you were just telling me before we started talking, you were telling me about an experience you just had recently of gardening out in Lewis and Clark.
Uh-huh.
And experiencing clay soil for the first time in a long time.
I had not worked in it for a long time, and I stuck the shovel into the ground, and I was like, wow. And you picked up the shovel, and it weighed a million pounds, and it was just this glump, and I was like, I just hadn't experienced that in a while. Yeah, I've definitely built up the gardens around here and all the areas that I work, you know, compost and just working into that all the time. Just constantly amending the soil has made a big difference. It's nice to stick a shovel into the ground and it yields to you, and it's easy to work with. And I know that's a treat for any gardener. That's the key, is to having a great base like that.
And it just takes time.
Just takes time.
Time and patience.
Right. And joy.
And keep adding compost.
Yeah, and labor.
Well, there's that. But that's part of why we garden, isn't
it?
Yes. Because we enjoy being outside.
Yes, love it.
Even when it's raining sometimes.
It's kind of fun to work in the rain.
It can be. It can be really satisfying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very. Yeah. If I get out in the rain in the rain gear and I'm work 3 or 4 hours, I come in, I just feel, you know, I've been out there. I'm alive. It's yeah. It's great.
I know. Well, hopefully we'll have a good growing season this year, and maybe enough rainfall during the summer that it's not super dry.
Well, fortunately for me, I do have irrigation down there, but. So I don't have to worry about that as much down there. But on my own property, everything I plant is drought resistant, and I only have to water when you have a really long, prolonged period. I deep water about, you know, at least once a week during the really, really hot, but hardly ever do I have to. So you can get around that and still have ornamental gardens at home.
So it's very inspiring, I think, for people to know if you're concerned about it, if you have like really sandy soil that doesn't retain water so much, but just anywhere. You can still have a beautiful garden.
Yes, you can.
Reasonably low maintenance.
Yes, you can.
Not a lot of water.
Yes, you can. You certainly can.
Well, Pam, thank you so much for being so inspiring.
I hope it was helpful.
It was very helpful. I feel, you know, I honestly, you know, I grow so many annuals in just all the vegetables and cut flowers that we do. And I don't get to grow as many perennials, but you're making me feel kind of excited about that. And I want to go plant some around the property.
Go for it.
Because I miss them. I
Go
miss
for
them.
It.
And they're so beautiful. You're right. I might plant a few roadies too.
Yes. I'll keep using those
sure. Thanks, Pam.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of In Season on Coast Community Radio. Many thanks to my guest, Pam Fleming, for sharing her wisdom and experience about gardening in that sometimes tricky right near the ocean microclimate. If you'd like to join Pam for her annual tour of the beautiful landscaping installations in downtown Seaside, please contact the Seaside Downtown Business Association for dates and times. It's a wonderful way to gain inspiration about great plant combinations that will thrive in our coastal region. This week, I'm still missing in-season sound engineer Katie Claiborne, who is off having what I hope are some great musical adventures on the East Coast. Any weird noises are entirely the fault of your host, who is a much better gardener and farmer than she is a radio engineer. See you next time.